You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Merry Christmas.
Well,
in July.
Okay. All right. Oh, I pay attention.
And you do?
I believe that is maybe a reference to your wife's family who has, doesn't she have a Christmas in July thing with her family or something?
Yes, I just returned from the Garden State, the great state of New Jersey.
When you think gardens, you think New Jersey, don't you?
If you'd actually been to anywhere in New Jersey that wasn't like Newark, you might actually associate New Jersey with gardens. It's a shockingly beautiful state in a lot of parts of it, and we enjoy going up there. That's where my wife's from. Don't judge her; she's from New Jersey.
I feel people do, Gary. I think like if you were like to do a word association and you were to say like volcanoes, they say Hawaii, mountains, Colorado, gardens and beautiful greens and flora and fauna. Well, New Jersey. I think that New Jersey is the first thing that people would say when
you know what you are. You're a victim of the New York film industry's smear campaign against the great state of New Jersey for decades, where the only thing that New Yorkers who control film and television and have for many years, they only part of New Jersey they see is like across the river, which is the literal worst part of New Jersey. I mean, it's tough. It's all docks and factories and, you know, raccoons with switchblades. It's a rough place to live.
Those damn raccoons with the switchblades.
I'm telling you, with an eye patch, too, smoking cigarettes.
And an old army jacket. That's a callback for those of you who are longtime listeners.
There's an epidemic of raccoons with switchblades in Newark and Elizabeth. Anyway, so yeah, we go up there in July. This is really our only vacation, as you know, and many people know. We travel quite a lot. Most of it is specifically for work, and we just sort of tack a few days on to do some other stuff while we're there. But when we go to New Jersey, we actually just do nothing but family, typically, and we hang out with Julie's family in New Jersey. We go up to New York for a couple of days, hang out with my family. But one of the things that we do is we do Christmas in July. So we all dress up, and for one day around the 4th of July weekend, we pretend that it's Christmas. And let me tell you, I'm going to give you a small thesis on why it's better. Why Christmas in July is better. One, we only buy a gift for one other person. Everybody gets assigned a person to buy a gift for rather than everybody buying gifts for everybody, which is great. There's very little stress in that comparatively to trying to buy presents for everybody on your list. Two, it's one day.
Right.
Just one. Just one day, and then it's over. It's not 3 months like October. You go to Hobby Lobby, and they've already got the Christmas decorations out. Oh, wait, I mean August, and they've already got Christmas decorations out. It's like one day, and then you're done, and it's glorious. And I don't really like Christmas that much, but I'm growing very fond of Christmas in July. It's a good thing.
And it's so a good thing.
I'm back in town, and Florida right now, Central Florida, is it's like hotter than the devil's taint down here. I mean, it is, and more moist. It is the most awful place to live in the world right now.
Let's just take a second to stew in that visual for a minute, shall we?
I'm stewing in it right now.
More moist than the devil's taint.
Yeah, there's got to be. You got to assume it's moist.
I love a good metaphor. Let me just sip of coffee and dwell on that for a minute.
Yeah, you and me both, brother.
You announced that you had the second child on the way.
Yeah, we got a Julie is at this point about halfway done.
Baby's and
about halfway cooked.
I have a cousin. Well, let's see. No, this would be my first cousin's daughter, so I guess she calls me uncle, but I don't know what technically she would be like a second cousin.
First cousin once removed, something like that.
Yeah, once removed is by marriage, I believe. So I think it's a second cousin because she's the next one down the line.
I thought it was by generation. Nobody knows.
It up. Like, I'm not kidding. I look it up like 3 times a year because I can remember. I just for some reason want to remember it.
Cousin is such a good ubiquitous blanket term for someone you're loosely related to.
So she's been trying very hard to get pregnant for a while, and she's announcing this and one of the things she did, and this is the awful person that I am, is she took a picture of a series of pregnancy sticks showing negative and then the one that showed positive. And everyone is congratulating her And all I'm thinking is, she peed on those. You just put a picture, you just put a picture on Facebook of five sticks that you peed on. That's what I'm thinking.
There are just things that there's no getting away from how gross they are. You, like,
saying.
You miss the magic of childbirth, conception, the joy of finding out your family is growing. Also, thanks for showing me pictures of all those things you peed on.
You peed on, yes, all these things you peed on. Thank you very much. You know, your reference to moist brought this around in my mind and this lovely vision once again of the peed on sticks on Facebook. Yeah.
Speaking of gross stuff.
Okay, yeah, speaking of gross. Hey, speaking of Facebook, there's one other thing that happened, which happens every week, which I think we may have touched on this idea before. Somebody had posted, what is it with Facebook where someone, if they feel slighted or something, they feel like they have to tell the world, like, someone called me an a-hole today, and I'm not an a-hole, so I'm going to go on Facebook and announce to the world that I'm not an a-hole, and just make sure everybody understands I'm not an a-hole. What is it about Facebook that takes a personal interaction and turns it into, I now need to tell the world, you know, about my personal interaction? Not just a couple of choice friends.
There's some kind of, like, mass psychosis of, and the people with the medical updates. It's the constant, like, oh, well, just got my goiter lanced. I'm very excited about it. Pics coming soon. Pics in comments.
I love you. I love you. And I love you, everything about you, you people, no matter who you are. I love you.
All of you.
Please don't get upset at this. But, okay, listen.
But you're going to.
I got to believe the Almighty only has so much room on his desk for the prayer requests. So when I'm rolling through and I get the prayer request from my friend who just went in for an MRI because he's got a mass on his lungs, and it's followed by a prayer request for my daughter who's going in for a root canal, I've got to say, you know what? Maybe not so much with the root canal request. Maybe we just leave a little room on his desk for the people who are getting the lung cancer surgery.
It's like, I got this root canal thing, JC. We're going to go ahead and let the dentist handle that. You can work on the cancer and the war stuff. Just handle that. I'll hire a professional, and maybe we don't need any mojo to fix my kid's rotten tooth. That's not that big a deal.
They like there's, you know, like there's all these piles of paperwork on the desk, and he's like, "Oh, what do we got here? We've got 1,000 prayer requests for what is this? A root canal? Oh my gosh, Jesus Christ! Oh, I'm sorry. You're just like,
sorry, son.
And the person who put that in, if you're listening to the podcast, I love you, and I absolutely understand that you know you love your daughter, and you just want to send some good thoughts out there, and that's fine and dandy, but it doesn't mean I'm not going to make fun of you for it. And
yeah, well, you know, if you put it on the internet, what people don't understand is that everyone can see it.
Yes, everyone can see it.
And all it takes is, even if you think your accounts are private, somebody followed, all they have to do is screenshot it, and now they've got whatever you just posted forever. Like, the information is there, and it's never going anywhere.
Right.
So you don't have to put, like, you know, God bless her, like, my mom puts, my dad's medical history on the internet all the time, and we have so many friends that are like, okay, you know, here's the update on my gonorrhea diagnosis.
What did people do before you could just text out or tweet out on, you know, any thought that you had that happened to you that day? What did people do with those thoughts? They just
cornered people at the supermarket and started telling them about
their
problems.
That's what I did. I would just talk to the guy behind me in line in the supermarket, but I thought that I was abnormal. You know, and now you look at Facebook, it's like everybody have to throw something out on everything about their day.
Yeah, so testicular torsion, huh? Whew, that's a rough one. What do you say? One. Hey, could you pass me one of those Snickers and a Vanity Fair? Yeah, okay, thanks, pal.
Oh man, yeah. I'm constantly amused by it, and in a way, not amused.
It's a little TMI, and I've gotten into the habit of unfollowing people a lot, not unfriending people,
right?
But
unfollow.
It's really spending a couple of seconds a day when I check my social media and, you know, really cultivating my feed to, I'm not eliminating things I don't agree with. I'm basically eliminating oversharers and crazy people.
Because
some people think, hey, social media, this is where I should post all of my political, religious, philosophical ideas about everything all the time until nobody wants to be your friend anymore. Right. And I think that it's very, very tiresome. You know, I was actually listening to a really good interview with the Secretary of Defense. It was a funny story that was on the news yesterday. This high school kid works for his high school paper, and he sees a picture in the news of the Secretary of Defense, James Mattis. Is that his name?
No.
And he sees a picture of a White House employee, and they've got a bundle of books or something, and there's a post-it note, and it says James Mattis and his cell phone number on it, but it's like upside down. So the kid flips the picture, zooms in on it, and he gets the Secretary of Defense's cell phone number, and he calls him and leaves a message and asks for an interview for his school paper.
I hope he gave it.
He did it. He called him back and gave it to him.
That's right. That's investigative reporting. That should be rewarded.
Yeah, it was a really cool story, and one of the things that he'd said in the interview, one of the answers to the questions was about divisiveness and all the people and all the bile and things that people are spilling all the time, and how ideologies don't match up. And he said this thing that I thought was really cool. He said, I don't like people who are ideological, and I don't like ideology. He said, if you have an ideology, it means that you're not thinking anymore. It means you're not thinking critically. It means you're looking for facts to support what you already think instead of analyzing the facts and forming opinions based on the facts.
Right.
And I thought that was a really interesting way to do it. And people really need to think about that more when they repost the 8 celebrities you didn't know were gay from, you know, Huffington Post or whatever.
I don't understand why – we talked about this last week. I just don't understand why people care who Ben Affleck is dating.
I really don't at all. Although, did you see Tom Holland's dating Zendaya? They're co-stars in Spider-Man.
I don't care. Pretty exciting.
That's a hot scoop. That's hot off the presses, my friend. That's news. I read that this morning because I read the news.
Get that on Facebook.
It's hot.
Right away.
I shared it already. You know.
So before we forget, we've got to talk about the monkey in the picture.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, we do want to do that.
We talked about this when this story first broke. This was about a year or so ago.
What's the breakdown of how did this all happen?
Okay, well, this is a photographer who went and actually hung out with these monkeys. And I don't have that thing in front of me, but I feel that in order to accurately talk about this story, it's best if I avoid all of the actual facts.
Oh, that's very, very true.
So he hung out with a troop of monkeys that were, I guess, are endangered. And he figured out a way to set his tripod up and I would like to see the rig. I don't know how he did it, but he figured out some way to put something on the camera that would trigger the shutter that would attract the monkey. So the monkey would then basically trip the shutter and take the picture. So he ended up getting some great selfies of these monkeys, one of which went extremely viral. And then when he tried to enforce his copyright, specifically I think with Wikipedia, Wikipedia said, you don't have the copyright on this image because you did not take it.
The monkey took it.
So then that became a legal fight of how can the monkey have the copyright? And then PETA got involved, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
Well, don't forget the U.S. Copyright Office subsequently ruled that animals cannot own copyrights.
Yes, but then PETA got involved and sued him on behalf of the monkey. And it's going through the courts once again to try and decide who actually owns the copyright. And so what I really find hilarious about it is the intricacies of the things that the judges are having to look at. These are our paid public employees, ladies and gentlemen. One of the things the judges are looking at is, well, copyright passes down to your heirs and your legitimate heirs. So how do we determine who the legitimate heirs of the monkey are? If the copyright does in fact go to the monkey, who are the legitimate heirs of the monkey? Because judges, they can't just make law. They can't just say, this is stupid. They have to look at the law and figure out a way to say, the law as it's written doesn't support your case, crazy person. That's the way they have to do it. They can't just say, you're crazy and kick it out. They have to support it. So now they're trying to find a way to do it. And then his lawyer is also saying that the monkey that they're suing on behalf of may not be the actual monkey in the photograph. And, you know, and shouldn't we at least make sure we're being sued by the right monkey? And there's a sentence that I'm sure when he was in law school, he never thought that he would be saying in a court of law. Shouldn't we make sure we're being sued by the right monkey?
I just got off the phone with the good folks at PPA, and they have now added a primate membership.
So that's right.
We're calling it PPA Primate. And you can join and then and sign up for the grassroots campaign, ppa.com/grassroots.
That's right, to protect your copyright from the monkeys.
To protect your copyright from monkeys. Although, if you are a monkey, join PPA and help us with Grassroots so we can take away your copyrights. Either way, it's fine.
Here's the thing and that drives me crazy about everything having to do with laws in America is that we don't change them fast enough. We should change them so fast. When the minute this gets cut from the courts, like the House of Representatives, so just that day, it would take them 5 minutes to go, bang, bang, new law amending the copyright law saying that animals can't own copyrights. Who's in favor? I pass. Bam.
Everybody good
Thank
with
you.
That? Everybody good?
Everybody's done, and now this is we don't have this problem anymore. Animals can't own copyrights. And that
you know what?
That.
I'm thinking about Schoolhouse Rock in my head as you're saying this, and I'm That's like, right. What is the life of a bill? And I'm pretty sure that it's not just bang bang, we have a new law. I think there's some procedure involved, you know.
Well, it's a long, long wait in the capital city and a long, long wait while you're sitting in committee. But if they sign you, then you'll be a law. How I hope and pray that I will, but today I am still just a bill. I know every Schoolhouse Rock song. I love them. Love them all. But so he's fighting this in court. So right. What I wanted to ask you, Gary.
There's an update on the story before we do this, is that the story that we posted on our Facebook page is also that the guy cannot afford to fly because he's
no.
I don't think he lives in the United States. He couldn't afford to fly to San Francisco to attend the hearing this week. So that he could, you know, be there for it. And he can't afford to pay the attorney who's been defending him because of the... This is a line that kills me. Here, let me read directly from the article on The Guardian. Nor can he afford to replace his broken camera equipment or pay the attorney who has been defending him since the crested black macaw sued him in 2015.
Let me tell you, those crested black macaws are a litigious species.
They really are
you don't,
litigious.
You do not want to get into a fender bender with a crested
macaw. Oh, gosh.
Black
Every time that's macaw. Ever happened, you just shake your head.
Here comes
you
the lawyer. You know,
here
they're,
he comes.
They're coming right at you. It's not going to be pretty, the crested black macaws. I don't want to throw a stereotype out there because I have some friends who are crested black macaws, and they're fine and wonderful people. But I would say, generally speaking, that you don't want to be going to court against the crested black macaw. So,
I don't know how do you say it's racist if it's not a human.
Well, this would be speciesist.
Speciesist.
It's speciesist. I'm being speciesist.
You're being very speciesist right now.
Being very speciesist. Can we agree? But you know, this does bring a bigger debate into play, and that is okay. In a situation like that, it should be his copyright. It should belong to the person who owns the equipment. It should belong to the person who set up the equipment. I mean, if I pose a scene and set everything up, right, and get it all done together, and my camera's on a tripod, and then I want the dress to flow a certain way. So I walk over and I'm like, I'm going to make the dress flow, and you just click the shutter for me. Now that's your picture, because you're the one who actually pushed the button, even though
Not
I did
if
everything.
If the person's working for you, see, here's where the guy made a mistake. See,
he should have employed.
Mr. Slater should have had a scope of work contract with the monkey, and he should, and it paid him a fair wage, and then under federal copyright law, he would have owned the copyright no matter who pushed the shutter. If he'd have just put the monkey on the payroll, he wouldn't have this problem.
Well, see,
so let that be a lesson to you, listeners. Make sure that you pay your animals before they push the shutter.
If his lawyer was smart, he would be like, at any point before you took the pictures, did you give any of them any food? Because that's you can now claim you paid them. They were working as assistants to you. And I mean, I would not surprise me one bit if they tried to take that tack to say, no, those monkeys were actually working for him, and therefore that's still his picture, and he still
can
owns
you
that copyright.
Can you imagine after these hearings, the judge goes back to his chambers and he's like, you gotta be kidding me.
You gotta be kidding me. Right.
Like he's like 8 years of law school, 25 years as a circuit court judge. Like,
I get the big questions. Yeah, I get the big questions that have to be resolved.
Dealing with the hard issues of the day, the real hot button topics. The whole thing is absolutely preposterous.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. It's his picture. It's his camera. He set it up. It's his copyright. It's his image. Move on.
And even if we discover in a very Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy way that monkeys have been like these sentient, thoughtful creatures the entire time, and he did intentionally push it, and the monkey really wants to sue, and we just didn't have the science to read monkey brainwaves or whatever, this will just fall into the cracks of, we don't have a law for that right now.
Yes.
And when we do, you know what I mean?
Yes, absent a law, then the copyright is obviously would have to belong to the person who owns the equipment and set it up. How is that not? Okay, before I forget, because I actually want to talk about this every week and I keep forgetting, I wanted to to ask about, and this kind of plays into the same thing. I'm reading National Geographic the other day. Just a joy always to read Nat Geo. And there's a picture, they did a whole story on hunting in England and deer stalking and pheasant stalking. And the whole story, I think, was about people buying huge parts of land in England and how they're doing hunting and stuff. But more importantly, they're maybe cutting off the land to where ordinary people used to get on the land and now they can't or whatever. And this was in Scotland, the United Kingdom. So there's this great picture of like four or five guys and they're in their classic garb with their shotguns and they're around like a downed elk or whatever. And there's the beautiful moors behind them. It's just a fantastic, beautiful picture. It's a double page picture. And then the caption down at the bottom says, Dougie, first of all, his name is Dougie, which you gotta love. Dougie Langlands oversees deer stalking at the 44,000 acre blah blah estate owned by the same family for 150 years. And then in small print it says, composite of six images, preceding pages, composite of seven images. So the picture you're looking at is a composite of six images, and the page before was a composite of seven images.
Oh, wow.
National Geographic. When did this start?
Now, is it possible that because of the scope of the image, it's not like a Hollywood movie post? It's basically he might have taken almost a panoramic by shooting multiple pictures and stitching them together. Right. Well, that's technically a composite.
The page before was just landscape. So I was like, okay. But this, it doesn't look like it's so panoramic that it needed to be a stitched image.
But for the resolution to be crazy good, I mean, this is something that I know Ryan Brenneiser's been doing for years, a wedding photographer in New York, has been doing like 25 image composites, just doing panoramic stitches, 25, 30, 50, even 100 images, just to do a portrait of the bride and groom.
Right.
And he does that stuff all the time. And I have to think that it'd be more than something like that rather than like photoshopping in the hunters or something.
I don't know, that because there's like four or five hunters and all of them have the perfect, you know, it's all angled really well.
Might just do some head swapping in
there. So I don't know, but I was just so surprised to see it in Nat Geo.
Though is that they listed it. How many magazines list that it was a composite?
Yes.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm glad that they listed it. I'd be more happy if it didn't exist. Not that I'm against it, but it would be nice to have just one last bastion of single-click photography in the world. And it's fine that we don't. But I don't think that Nat Geo is significantly increasing their reputation with this picture. That they could have done it without the stitching and they still would be Nat Geo. You know, but that's fine. But it is nice that they listed it. But when I mean, a composite of six images and the other one's a composite of seven images.
Huh. I'm going to see if I can pull up the picture. Maybe we can... was it?
Google Dougie Langlands. You might be able to find
You know, with your track record of pronouncing things very, very wrong, I'm not sure that I'm going to go ahead and just assume that you... No, I know.
It's definitely Dougie. It's Doug with an I-E. What will become of the Scotland Moors? National Geographic. There we go. Okay, so let's scroll down and find that picture. There it is right there. It's the second one on the page. What Will Become of the Scotland Moors is the name of the story. And I'm going to grab it right now and quickly slap it over to our Facebook page. So those of you who might be listening in front of your computer will be able to find this particular story as well.
That is a cool picture.
The one I'm talking – the group sitting around the stag?
Yeah.
Yeah, but when you look at that, does that look like it was something that required compositing in terms of – I mean, the background is out of focus. I mean, even the horse, the guy with the horse right behind him is out of focus. This just looks like a, you know, this doesn't look like it's a, we require that. The one for at the top of the page that's the landscape, okay, I can see maybe that one being stitched. But the picture of the guy standing around the elk doesn't look like it's something that requires six images, right?
I think it's head swaps or something.
It's got to be head swaps, or maybe the horse on the right in the background had his head down for one picture, so they swapped it so his head would be up.
You know, it was probably the horse in the back was smoking, and he's like, did you have to spark up right before I took the picture?
Oh, all the time.
Probably the elk was probably on his iPhone, and he's like, you know, could you just get off the iPhone for a second so I can take
just
this picture?
For a second.
But then in that picture, the expression of the other guy was so good. It's probably something as simple as that, you know.
But I don't see him. I mean, looking at this picture, you wouldn't think, well, this is obviously going to be six images together. So it's, I got to believe it's Photoshop, right? I got to believe it's not that we stitched it together because of for panoramic purposes.
Yeah, you know, this is an editorial portrait and not necessarily photojournalism, you know, and I wouldn't think that the integrity of the magazine rests on whether or not this was a single image capture.
I don't think it does either, and especially because they identified it as not being a single image. You can do whatever you want as long as you tell us. That's my opinion. You know, as long as you tell us what you're doing, I don't care. It's when you try and, you know, it's when you try and sneak one by us. So yeah, I don't think it compromises, but I do think it's just interesting that this is where they are now. That even,
you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to email the photographer Jim Richardson, and I'm going to see if he wants to come on the show.
Oh, that would be fantastic!
Yeah, send him an email. Let's see how it goes.
That would be great.
Why not? In the meantime,
it's a fantastic picture. No two ways around it. I love the picture.
In the meantime, I want to talk about the dangers of horse chain smoking.
I've been working with a group on weekends.
To try and
get the word out myself about the horse chain smoking. I'm glad that you brought it up, Gary, and I would like to hear your thoughts.
We're a ridiculous pair of idiots.
Here's what's funny. Scroll down the page, and there is a picture of the moors and the heather in the moors, and it doesn't say that it's composited. And it's a picture that absolutely looks like it was composited.
Yeah, no, that's stunning. Really, really nice. Yeah, definitely check out that article because it's got some... You know, Nat Geo just constantly blows me away with the quality of the photography.
Unbelievable.
And it seems, despite some of it being sort of composited, and I don't have a problem with it, but, I mean, it doesn't have any hyper-realistic look to it. It's
right.
Just really solid photography that just looks great. It's not, like, heavy vignetting or overly crunched with, like, a tonal contrast filter. It's just really great, clean photography. And you just got to hand it to them for just consistently putting on amazing photography
for so many years.
Absolutely.
Well, what gets me, too, is, like, with the picture we're talking about, you say, okay, it's a composite of six images, and I want to know why. Because there's other things that aren't done to this picture that you or I would do instinctively right away. For instance, there's something in the grass that we would remove in Photoshop. And when I look at one of the hunter's jacket, there's some water stains on his jacket. And we probably would have fixed those water stains. But those things are not done because that would be changing reality. And that's something that they don't want to do.
But Photoshopping out the horse's cigarette.
There you go.
But yet
they did do a composite. So I would be fantastic if we could talk to him because I would like to know what was done to make the image.
All right, I'm going to email the guy. Yeah. Probably I'm going to go. Hey, Mr. Richardson, are you? We'd love to have you as a guest on the Photobomb podcast. And he'd probably go,
what?
Yeah, I'm not going to email. I'm not going to email that back.
I'm not gonna.
In fact, I would be willing to bet a fair amount of money that I don't even get an email back from the guy. But I'm going to give it a whirl.
Listen, you got to throw some weight around, brother. You got to be like, you know, that the Photobomb podcast with how important we are in the world of photography.
We have literally tens of listeners.
That's right. We're both counselors in the PPA.
he's going to go,
what's the PPA? As he texts you on his satellite phone from the African landscape where he's been where he's been living in a hole for 3 days, so I had to take a picture of a bear cub.
Yeah.
Pretty sure they don't have bears in Africa, by the way. I just want to point that out.
Sure, yeah, I'll connect to the non-existent internet and Skype in with you guys so that we can do an interview. Although, you know what? I wonder how much guys like this, like, we have so many sort of rock star speakers in our industry in the portrait and wedding world. Do you think these guys get any love? As are like from the photographic community, the guys who shoot for Nat Geo,
they don't get the love. They, in my opinion, do not get the love that they should get. And by the way, who knows? He may let us interview him in the same way that the Secretary of Defense let the kid interview him. It may be like, you bothered to reach out to me, but no, they don't get the love that they deserve.
Like, I feel bad for these guys.
They don't get the love that they deserve. And and not to go off on a tangent, but I've always just wanted once that for someone who merits in competition with wildlife photography that was taken at the zoo. I would like them to meet a Nat Geo photographer and say to him, "Oh, really? I'm a wildlife photographer too." So that so the Nat Geo photographer could just laugh at him and say, "You know, you guys you're not."
Guys like Scott Bourne, who he's an Olympus shooter, who goes out to Alaska and like lives in a yurt and hangs out on a canoe for a 6 weeks to get pictures of eagles. And then you got the guy who just goes to the Central Park Zoo and photographs the seals, you know. Like,
right.
Good for you, buddy. Like, yeah. That grizzly bear looked really close. He was. He was 3 inches away, just on the other side of glass that's 4 inches thick.
Yes, on the other side. Yeah, for my money, the Nat Geo photographers are the greatest in the world. It's interesting how much I love the Nat Geo photographers, and it's interesting how much, when I'm on the internet and looking at photography, how much I'm drawn to street photography and life photography, given the fact that I don't do any of that.
Yeah. That's not totally abnormal.
I don't do any of it, but yet I'm interested. Like when it's like, oh, a photo essay of the slums of Bangkok, I'm like, oh, I want to see that. You know, I'm interested in that, even though I have no desire necessarily.
Maybe
to
you missed your calling. You should go from photographing, tourists on the beach to photographing the third world.
Oh, good luck with that. Got to have a certain, you know what I mean? You got to have a certain something.
I couldn't see you anywhere where you don't have like your electric blanket.
Yes.
And a comfy couch to sit on.
The bottom line is I want to be able to go back to my room to take a dump. If I can't, so anything I'm shooting needs to be.
Why does this always come up?
It needs to be walking distance from my hotel. Because, you know, I'm like George Costanza. I like to get completely undressed. And like, then,
is there a bathroom around here? Well, we have this hole over here in the dirt that everybody watches you while you go. It's pretty awesome.
You know where the bathroom is? It's in the yurt.
Yurt.
It's in the yurt.
It's in the yurt. Yeah. You know, I just can't see you in a chemical toilet, you know? No. I just can't. I can't picture it. I mean, I'm trying to picture it. I just can't picture it. I can picture you getting halfway through take a plane and a bus, ride in the back of a truck, get into the tiny little prop plane to go to island, and I can see you halfway there go, eh, uh-uh.
Listen, I just turned down a wedding. I just turned down a wedding this week in Finland. I turned down a wedding in Finland to see the Northern Lights. Because I just said, you know, it's a little too cold. Just a little too cold for me. I'm sorry. I'm not going to Finland.
You are the worst.
I'm not going to Finland. Listen, it's not all that. I mean,
hundreds of wedding photographers just went, no!
Yeah. I mean, listen, don't get me. I worked a wedding at a resort this last weekend where it was 95, 98 degrees, and I was dressed in black from head to toe. And for the first time ever, my shirt was completely soaked through. I mean, so heat, no problem. But cold, I don't do well with the cold.
Was it moist?
It was unbelievably moist. I mean, like crazy. I've never sweated this bad at a wedding ever.
For those listeners in other parts of the country, I cannot express to you the level of humidity, the oppressive humidity that we get. There are other places that get hot, no problem. Like Phoenix is 122,000 degrees, but the humidity here, there's just no relief. There's never a cool breeze. There's never like a, you know, you literally it's like wintertime. Up north, you just stay inside. It's what we do, locals, mostly, unless you have to go outside for work, you're staying inside. Because going outside is like somebody is going to wrap you up in the devil's taint. That's what it's like when you go outside.
The beach is actually not as bad because there usually is a breeze. It's the only place where there is a breeze. Anywhere else in Florida, and you're just dying. So there's
a
breeze.
It's a hot breeze.
Yes, but it's a hot breeze. It's like having a space heater blowing on you.
It's like when you walk outside your front door, it's like opening up an oven and being hosed down with volcanic rock at the same time.
Yeah. And it's so draining. Like when you have to go pick your kids up from school, just going to the car line, when you come back, you just need a nap. It just sucks the energy out of you.
I shot a couple of real estate jobs this week, too, in the same day, and I was outside for 90% of it. And it was like I was done at 3 o'clock, and I go, okay, well, I'll head back to the studio and get a little bit. Nope, I'm just going to go straight home and get in bed.
Awful. And I'm not a napper, but I'll come in and I just need to lay down for a minute. Just walking from the house to the car.
I will nap like nobody's business.
I admire the nappers. I do. I wish I could be a napper. You know, the people who just say, I'm just going to take a quick 30-minute nap. I'm like, that must be awesome.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I can't do it. My mind won't turn off.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, you have to lay there, and you have to picture yourself floating down into deep water, deeper and deeper.
I'm drowning, Gary. Oh. I'm drowning.
Okay, so let's not try the nap thing. We can try something else. Let's visualize something else.
It's not going to work.
You're on the surface of the moon. No? Is that not doing it?
Can't breathe. I can't breathe, Gary.
Okay, hold on.
Sleeping, not my strong suit.
You're on an island in the middle of the ocean.
Oh, great.
On a...
Great. Cut your finger and die.
All alone.
Because there's absolutely no alcohol for, no. Not to mention, where are you going to poop?
That's a good... Right in the ocean. And it just keeps washing and then back swimming up it. To you.
My youngest daughter, we're going on a cruise. We're on a cruise right now as this podcast is playing. And my youngest daughter, we're taking her on a cruise in the Caribbean and going, wait till you see the beautiful blue ocean and the beautiful blue water. And she's like, yeah, it's just a giant fish's toilet. I'm like, oh, you're just going to have a good time.
I think about that. Whenever we travel, we always like to go to zoos and aquariums. We take Ellie, my two-year-old. And either I or my wife or both of us, we take her somewhere. And whenever you go to an aquarium, I'm looking at the beautiful, beautiful life in the sea and just contemplating how two-thirds of the planet is just this vast thing that nobody ever gets to see. And then you're just looking at this beautiful fish swimming by, and then it, takes a dump and keeps going, and just keeps swimming.
I feel the same way. I feel the same way about farms. When people, they have the idyllic vision of a farm, and I'm like, have you ever been to a farm? Because it just smells like poop everywhere.
If you have to really work on a farm, and my mom trained horses when I was little, and we were on the horse ranch all the time, and you just get nose blind to it.
Right.
But if you haven't been in a while, you go back, you go, oh yeah, this is not cool. This
no.
is not fun.
God.
The hansom cabs in New York City. You know, it's like, hey, do you want a hansom cab ride? Want to ride around Central Park? I go, nah. If you got a Segway, I'll think about it.
I'm going to sit here and stare at this horse's butt while he takes a dump in the middle of the John Lennon Memorial.
There's nothing more romantic than cuddling up under a blanket on a cool fall day, a crisp autumn day in New York City, hopping in the hansom cab, pulling a warm blanket over you, and watching a horse take a dump in a bag.
Good news is you can use the poop bag as a hand warmer. You can roast your chestnuts right there.
I get that it's quaint and stuff, but didn't we invent a car at some point?
Yes, haven't we invented something better?
Oh, okay. Man.
We have to wrap this up. We have been talking and talking and talking.
There's a lot of feces in this episode.
Yes. Feces and species. Matter of fact, I think that's going to be the name of the episode right there. Species and feces.
We'll start with species. Never lead with feces. Don't lead with feces. Don't lead with it.
Either that, or are we sure the right monkey is suing me? That's
the right monkey.
Right. Am I being sued by the correct monkey? Okay, so what do we got coming up? Well, the big thing that's coming up very shortly is IPC. The competition is coming up. If you've got your
and
images
we will
in.
Both be there.
We will both be there.
Do you want to do this an is pretty awesome because the IPC?
This will be my third year there and my second year with you there. And
yeah.
I think the odds of that happening are pretty slim, and I'm pretty glad that it is because I'll have you to hang out with.
Yeah, it'll be cool because it's not exactly sort of exciting because to be there, it's kind of fun to socialize with everybody, but it's not really anything to do.
No,
it's not like everybody's going out and partying every night because you got to get up early and be on point for judging. But it is nice to really socialize. These are a good bunch of people, all the judges
absolutely.
And the PPA
absolutely.
Staff that put this on. But I think we should do an episode from IPC. That would be cool.
Well, I'm sure we will. Sure. We did last time. So I'm sure we'll probably do one while we're there.
Can we just do it on my mobile recorder so I don't have to bring all the gear? Okay, that'd be good.
So advanced warning, the audio will not be great because we'll just use the little mobile recorder. But the good news is we'll be able to probably pull in somebody who's much more interesting than us to have on the show.
Fun fact, our most popular episode we've ever recorded was called Lesson Number 2, Live from Imaging USA from this past January. And that was recorded just with the little Tascam mobile recording device. So just to let you know.
Goes to show that it's about the quality of the content and not the quality of the actual recording. also very popular because that is a show that is very, very much about poop.
So it is quite a bit. How can people find out where to watch the IPC and when to be ready? And
well, I'm glad you asked, Gary Hughes. That would be stream.theipc.org. Go to stream.theipc.org, and that's where you'll be able to watch the competition as it comes through, and you'll be able to watch IPC Live with your host, Bure Perry. And even if you are not competing, go and watch the feed, because you will see work that is just beyond anything you thought was imaginable. You'll see incredible work, and it will inspire you and push you to greater heights, and it's all a lot of fun. And there will be many judges working all day. Gary Hughes will be one of them, working all day to judge these prints, and then I'll be doing my show as well, and it's a good time. It's one of my favorite things, really. Maybe my favorite thing. Next to Imaging USA, it's my favorite thing that I do all year.
Yeah, it's just really cool to see what other people are doing, to see how images are presented, even if you're not involved in it. I think that's really worth doing. I judge for WPPI, Imaging USA, and I've seen competitions at many, many different groups. And nobody who takes part in this doesn't up their game because of it. There's right. Nobody who doesn't become a better photographer who consistently gets involved in this. So I think it's very, very cool. Did you enter this year?
I did, in fact, put some images in, yes, none of which will merit.
Great. I'm excited for you then. Yeah.
I put in two 79s, I think, and 278s. That's my prediction.
Well, that's a good year for you. That's really great.
That's a good year. 279s.
It's a little high. It's a little on the high side.
That's what I'm going for.
So I want to bring up one thing. Yesterday I did a live webinar for PPA EDU, which was really cool. It was on social media marketing essentials. PPA is doing a very kind of creative live thing where they do live webinars on various topics that you can tune into, take part in live, ask questions of the instructor, and you don't have to be a PPA member. You just have to register for the seminar, and it's like a GoToMeeting thing. It's a really cool process. I've done a couple of them. And they also archive those webinars and put them on PPA's website under PPA EDU. So if you're a PPA member, you can go back and listen to any of the webinars pretty much that they've ever done. That whole library of webinars and education is on there, and it's included with your PPA membership. And it's a huge, huge resource. And so I'm going to post on the on our Facebook page a link to the page with the schedule of live webinars. And I would encourage you to take part in that because it's free, awesome education that's really – usually they're 1 hour, really to the point, something that you can listen to while you're working. And I'm really blown away by the quality of the instruction and what they're putting up there and giving that just to everybody. It's not even a member benefit to watch it live. If you can watch it live without even being a member, I think that's really cool.
That's fantastic. I forgot to ask you, did you enter an IPC?
I did.
I know you were working on some stuff, but I didn't know.
I did.
Because I know you missed the deadline. Maybe it was last year or the year before.
I've got three that I'm like pretty sure will merit, and one that it's like a toss-up. But it's just been – we've been having the busiest year we've ever had at our studio, and just to find time to mop the floor in my dang studio is a struggle. But I am pretty proud of what I put in. I'm interested to see what comes back. This will be my first time judging an IPC, so I'm really stoked to learn from the other judges that are there and to see the big show, like all the quality of all the images as they come through, the ones that have been through districts. And it's going to be a really hot competition. I'm really excited about it. I think it'll be very cool.
Yeah, I'm into some rule changes this year, and I'm interested to see what that's going to be like. And
we posted that. That's on the page. All the new rule and entry issues are on the Photobomb Facebook page with a link to PPA's website where those are available.
All right. Well, let's wrap this thing up then. I got nothing
else. I have one more thing.
Oh, you have one more thing? I'm sorry.
One more thing. August 19th and 20th in Riverside, California is the Image One Expo, a Southern California imaging extravaganza, and that is going to be in Hunt Park at Image One Photo and Video, and it's sponsored by Manfrotto, Canon, Sigma, Nikon. It's a huge, huge event for 2 days, and I will be doing a demonstration class for Promark Brands, one of my sponsors, demonstrating the photogenic lights and the PhotoFlex softboxes and ring light stuff. I'll be doing a lot of cool stuff for a couple of hours in that booth over there. And so if you're in California, and I know at least two of you are in California, then come see me in Riverside, California, August 19th and 20th at Image One Expo. And all that information is on the internet, so go find it.
That's a long flight. You were just in California last month.
Yeah.
How long is that flight?
Yeah, that's about 5 hours.
Wow.
It, It's,
no,
it's,
I know. It's got to be long. It's like 5 hours to Vegas from here.
I think it was like five and a half, 6 hours to San Diego.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, if you go into the southern part of California, because that dips in and moves.
It might be yeah. six to fly into LAX, but here's the thing. I'm going by myself. This time I'm not taking my family with me. And a 6 hour flight is like a little vacation when you're by.
Yes, it can be. Sometimes it's like, it's the reason that we take cruises is because it's the only way we can detach, truly detach from work.
Oh, no, I'm so buying the Wi-Fi. I'm going to be detached, but there'll be nothing that I can do for anyone from there. So I load up the audiobooks on the phone, and I like settle in with a nice neck pillow, and I get my nice headphones, and I just cozy up into that seat, and I just enjoy the solitude for 6 hours. It's actually pretty nice.
Right. Listen, find
not that
online.
I don't love having my family with me.
Here comes the backpedaling.
Because I just realized my wife is sitting right behind me. Hi, honey. You can say hi. Can you say hi louder?
Hi.
There she is. Yes. She exists. She exists.
St. Julie, as we call her.
St. Julie, yes, absolutely.
But you can find us online, facebook.com/photobombpodcast. That's where you're going to find links to all of the stuff that we talk about on the show. And please comment or leave suggestions or things you'd like for us to talk about. That's where most of the activity takes. We also have a website that is photobombpodcast.com, but the Facebook page, of course, is where you're going to get the most interaction. You can find Gary at hughesfioretti.com.
Yep.
You can find me at bureperry.com, and you can send us an email. Send it to questions@photobombpodcast.com, and we'll see you back here next week.
See you later. Watch out for those black macaws.